All the way up. Bueno. It's my honor to recognize the outstanding investigative work of Sergeant Hall, Detective Overacker, Detective Hughes, Detective Pittenger, together with Code Enforcement Officer Tomac and Community Service Officer Purify, who is not here tonight, for their collective efforts in the investigation into the tragic murder of Todd Pinion. Their teamwork, professionalism, and dedication exemplify the very best of the Atascadero Police Department. On October 30th, 2024, the Atascadero Police Department received a report of a missing person. Over the following 2 days, information developed that elevated circumstances of the disappearance to a suspicious case, and detectives were formally assigned to lead a focused and coordinated investigation. The investigative team, led by Detective Hall, moved swiftly. Within a short period of time, detectives identified critical surveillance footage, developed leads regarding the vehicle involved, and located and intervened a key interviewed a key suspect in Southern California. Through skilled investigative work and effective interviewing techniques, detectives obtained information that led to the recovery of the victim and critical evidence related to the crime. Detectives Overacker, Hughes, and Pittenger worked diligently to follow up on emerging leads, recover evidence, and ensure all investigative steps were completed thoroughly and professionally. Code Enforcement Officer Tomac and Community Service Officer Purify played a vital role in canvassing the area and locating supplemental video evidence, which led to the identification of the primary crime scene and helped corroborate witness statements. Through teamwork, urgency, and precision, this investigation was resolved in a remarkably short period of time. For their outstanding service, I am proud to present Sergeant Hall, Detective Overacker, Detective Hughes, Detective Pettinger, Code Enforcement Officer Tomac, and Community Service Officer Purify with the Chief Certificate of Commendation. Please join me in recognizing these professionals for their dedication to justice and public safety. So thank you all very much for coming out, and thank you again, Mayor, for giving us the time.
Council would like to come down and take a picture with everybody.
I was about to invite you, so thank you very much. So let's go ahead and get you guys more into the middle here. If I can get you everybody here to scoot over in front of where the mayor's seat is. This time I'll be in it, yep.
All right. Thank you again to the police department. Great work, especially on the Pinion murder case. That was outstanding. We always appreciate the opportunity to honor our outstanding employees. We're going to move on to our consent calendar, and the consent calendar consists of items that are considered routine and non-controversial by city staff and will be acted upon by a single motion by the city council unless otherwise requested by a council member. And we will allow public comment. I will first see, there are only two items on tonight's consent calendar, so I'll first see if any member of the council has a question or would like to pull an item. All right, let's see if we have any public comment on the consent calendar. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to council for a motion.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk and a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Bobo?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Okay, thank you. Our next item is updates from the city manager. City Manager Lewis is actually attending a League of Cities or Cal Cities conference. He is on the board of directors and a member of the city manager division as well. So he is out of town this evening, and he will be substituted by our assistant city manager and city clerk, Laura Christensen.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Today, I'd like to provide some updates. Upcoming events this weekend will be the Sweetheart Stroll, the Sip and Shop. That'll be this Friday from 5:30 to 8. Come down, get tickets through the Atascadero Chamber. You can enjoy phenomenal wine, beer, coffee, and other treats while you visit 15-plus businesses in downtown Atascadero. Have a little pre-Valentine's Day celebration. Online tickets, like I said, they're available until noon on Friday through the Chamber's website. They are $35. Just a reminder, there's a limited number of tickets that'll be available for purchase in-person day of event. So if you do plan to attend, get those tickets in advance. And they will also be offering tours of City Hall, and those will be available from 5:30 to 7:30. This weekend is also Woo at the Zoo. This is a new and wildly fun Valentine's Day celebration. It'll kick off Valentine's Day from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. 10 a.m. will also be the unveiling of the refurbished Lion Water Fountain. So that will be right at 10 a.m. So for everyone who remembers that or would like to see what it looks like now, please come out. The event will include keepers talks, and that will focus on how animals choose their mates. There will be Valentine's themed activities, including enrichment for the animals. This is all part of general admission, or if you are a zoo member, then it's free. Also on Valentine's Day, so on Saturday, Earthshine will be here in Atascadero doing some creek cleanup. It will be the 9th annual Earthshine in Atascadero. So you can spend Valentine's morning helping to clean up along Atascadero Creek and throughout the community from 10 a.m. to noon. Earthshine will be serving free pizza and refreshments to all of the wonderful volunteers, and that's thanks to donation from Mayor Bourbeau. Earthshine will supply everything that you'll need to help clean up. So in that will include grabbers, bags, safety vests, and gloves. And the city of Atascadero will have trash cans and disposal to collect all that litter. As a reminder, State of the City, the 2026 update will be on February 18th from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. at Colony Cinemas. Tickets are available online through the Chamber's website, business.atascaderochamber.org. Find out what's upcoming for 2026. We'd love for you to stay informed and find out what's in store with the city. You can also hear from the president of the Chamber of Commerce. Coffee with a Cop is upcoming. That'll be Thursday, February 19th from 8 to 10 a.m. That'll be held at Malibu Brew. It'll be a nice, relaxing environment to come and connect with our police department. Come on down, share a hot cup of coffee and conversation, and learn all about what's happening with our police department. Again, that's February 19th. That's Thursday from 8 to 10 a.m. As a reminder, there's ongoing rec registrations for youth T-ball. That registration's open for boys and girls ages 4.5 to 6. That registration does end February 27th. Volunteer coaches and sponsors are needed for the league. If you're interested, please contact the rec division. If you do plan to coach or are interested in coaching, a coaches meeting will be held on Thursday, March 19th at Paloma Creek Park. Adult basketball spring season, that registration's open ending March 2nd. And adult social kickball spring season, that registration's open and registration deadline's March 23rd. Again, registration can be done online or by visiting Colony Park Community Center. The Los Altos culvert repair is completed. It's now safe for passage. And the improvements that were done after a culvert failure include the replacement of the culvert, stabilization of the culvert's entrance and exit, and new pavement over the trench line. And the 2026 chipping program is open for registration. The San Luis Obispo County Fire Safe Council is offering free chipping services to help Atascadero residents create and maintain that 100-foot defensible space that's required by California law. Please visit www.chipperday.com/SLOFSC to register for the chipping. The chipping will actually begin end of March, but it's important to get registered now. And always, as a reminder, information regarding storm preparation is on the city's website. Please be prepared for the storms that will continue through this weekend and then pick back up next week. If you see flooding or down limbs or trees in the street, those can be reported to the city's Public Works Department during regular business hours at 805-470-3148. And after regular business hours, please call our non-emergency police dispatch line at 805-461-5051. And sand is available free of charge in front of the city yard at the very end of Garbata. Please bring your own sandbags, and sandbags are available for purchase at both Home Depot and Miners. Again, for information on storm preparedness, visit the city's website, atascadero.org/emergency-preparedness. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Question for Fire Chief, is sand or the Public Works Director, is sand no longer available at the fire station?
We do have a little bit of sand left, but I think this will probably be the last time we have sand there. It'll all be over at the city yard on Gabarta.
Got it. Because once it's gone, we need to start
exactly
clearing out. Because as a reminder to the public, we will be tearing down Fire Station 1 to build a brand new station. Okay. Any other questions from council members? Councilmember Newsom, your mic is on. Did you have a question?
No.
Okay. All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for the update. We will move on to our next item, which is community forum. And community forum is reserved for persons wishing to address the city council on any matter that is not on the agenda, but over which the council has jurisdiction. The Brown Act prohibits the council from discussing matters not on the agenda, but we may at our discretion ask staff to contact a speaker regarding an issue raised in community forum or answer a very quick question. All right, we will begin. You speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we ask that you state your name for the record. First speaker, please.
Jeff Hosslin, resident of Atascadero. Good evening, council and staff. It was brought to my attention from a couple residents in a certain area that we have a little problem going on. They don't feel inclined to notify the city, so they've notified me because I'm the boisterous one that likes to keep everybody honest. So I've sat through some very long meetings and discussions of construction of the north area of town, whether it's Barrel Creek or the area where the market is or where the glamping is going to be. And we've talked about how we're going to enforce certain things, regulations, whether it's lighting or anything else. And the next council meeting, you're going to be discussing whether you're going to add other ordinances or not to Airbnbs in short-term rental. And I think this is where this comes into play. We have a lot of ordinances on the books right now, and we really don't have the staff to enforce them. So my opinion is, why are we adding more? And I get to use my time tonight and in 2 weeks to discuss this. So we have a new market in town, a supermarket in town. We had lengthy discussion with all council members here present, maybe not Mr. Peak, but everybody else, about what time and how they get to offload their trucks in the morning and what goes on. So based on the calls I've had, I have gone by 6 days in a row, and trucks are being offloaded at 5:55, 5:45 in the morning before 7 a.m. is the point. The residents over there are not very happy about that. The garbage truck also goes at 6:10 in the morning to get the dumpsters from our new market. It was agreed upon when they were here in the audience that it would be a 7 a.m. start. I've been told it's very difficult to enforce. Well, time for the city to say, you guys can't take your trucks till 7 a.m. and they shouldn't be idling either from 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning behind there. It's the only supermarket in town that has residents behind it where a truck or trucks are very noisy. And I do have video of the forklift with the beep beep on the back. So it is a little bit of an issue, and I think our council and our staff need to work it out between maybe planning and code enforcement or whatever to fix this problem and make sure going forward our other projects have the same. And we shouldn't be having to pay for more staff to do this, and everybody's very busy, but we don't have code enforcement on at 6 a.m., and our police officers are pretty busy, and it's petty for them to be dealing with it. So I hope there'll be some direction. Thank you. And yes, 3 minutes.
Excellent timing, 2:56. Anybody else wishing to speak at community forum?
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Chris Towers, and I'm hoping I can address the planning department. I'm not sure what other forum to use, so I'm hoping this is appropriate. 3 years ago-ish, we bought a house or a piece of property here in town with the intent of building a house on it. And we began the fun journey of fighting with the city to get a permit to build that house on. And after months and months of going back and forth, we initially got denied because building a 2,000 square foot house on a 3-acre piece of property qualified as dense residential, according to your rules, even though that would occupy less than 0.8% of the total land. So after months and months of fighting that, we got a letter from the city granting us permission to build the house. We then hired an architect and got the process rolling. So 6 months after that, we went to file for the permit to build the house and were again denied because the lady that wrote us the letter from the city of Atascadero no longer worked there, so they were not going to honor that. So we have been fighting with the city for the last several years to get permission to build said house, and we were kept quoting that we were being denied because the laws have changed. Every time we asked the city planning people what the law was that changed, they dodged our question despite numerous emails. And about 3 months ago, we finally got them pinned down, and they said that the laws had not changed, but their interpretation of the laws is what has changed. So we are constantly being told things that are not true. So we then got a hold of the appropriate people at the state of California who launched an investigation on our behalf. And it turns out that by law, from the state of California, we were allowed to build a house. So miraculously, after they came and did an investigation on our behalf, the next day we got a letter from the city again stating we would be allowed to move forward because they reinterpreted a map that had been issued a year and a half ago. So my question on that is, the letter that we got, is that going to be honored? Because according to the city, they also would not honor the first letter because there was no expiration date on it. This new letter we received also has no expiration date on it. So as we've now spent tens of thousands of dollars developing this property, and I'm sitting here wondering how much more do we have to keep enduring? Are we actually going to get to build this? So I'm not sure if this is the right forum, but we're at the end of our wits, and I'm just asking for you guys' understanding, and this is happening to more and more people. So I'm just bringing it to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. 255 beat Mr. Oslin by 1 second. Anybody else wishing to speak community forum? Okay, seeing no one else approach, I'll try to address this real quickly. Mr. Oslin, thank you for bringing that to our attention. I wish folks would just, if they have a complaint to make like that, they should just make it, because I doubt that anybody in the city is particularly aware of that issue. So thank you for bringing that to our attention, and I'm sure that community development will take a look at that, back at the conditions of approval for that project, and we'll see if we go from there. And Mr. Tower, I'm sorry to hear about your frustrations, but I'm sure Mr. Dunsmore in community development has made note of your comments and will, I'm sure, advise us what status is. So as noted, we cannot discuss anything brought up here in detail, so since it's not on the agenda. So, okay, with that, we will move on from community forum, and we will move on to our first public hearing, item H1, which is regarding the 2026 Community Development Block Grant Funding Recommendations. And I believe Public Works Analyst Ryan Betts is going to present this item to us.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council, Ryan Betts, Public Works Analyst with Public Works. I am pleased to present tonight the 2026 Community Development Block Grant Final Funding Recommendations. And just a little background regarding this item. The Community Development Block Grant is a federally very restricted funding source that cities and ultimately the county can take advantage of with the goal of helping low-income improvements and benefits to individual cities. The city participates along with other agencies in what's called the Urban County Program. Again, it's funded by the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department and administered locally by the County of San Luis Obispo. And that comes into play later on when I show you that the county takes an administrative fee right off the top. The Community Development Block Grant is an annual grant. Again, it provides activities that meet one of the three following criteria, and these are important. It has to benefit low and moderate income persons, or aid in the prevention or elimination of blight, or address urgent needs that pose a serious and immediate threat to the health or welfare of the community. This item should look fairly familiar to council because we presented the draft recommendations at the November 12th, 2025 City Council meeting, upon which the council gave direction on what the final recommendations could look like, and that is the purpose of tonight's meeting. Just a quick breakdown of the funding requests, if you will, or at least the final recommendations from council based upon the November 12th meeting. City staff expects approximately $176,000 to be allocated for the city of Atascadero to be used in a variety of ways for low-income families in support of. There are certain restricted categories within the CDBG program. Those are public facilities and housing projects. They have a 65% minimum. Then there's our public services. They have a 15% max. And then finally, administration is a 20% max. And as I mentioned earlier, the county takes right off the top the 13% share, which leaves the city of Atascadero with 7%. It's important to note that the final numbers have not been released by HUD yet. So you'll see in the recommendation that for council's consideration that if the amounts slightly change, staff has the ability to adjust those proportionally to the items that you provide a final recommendation to. Staff has put together the following table that lists the requests by the different requestees for the funding, separated by categories. The application amount is that first column, and then the council draft recommendations from earlier or later in 2025 are on the right. As you can see, and this is typical, requestees ask for more funding than's actually available. And then council has the privilege of figuring out where those limited resources go towards. Just a couple of notes of what this funding is proposed to be used for. The first one under public facilities is the Viejo Camino sidewalk and ADA improvements for a request of $114,000. That project will provide 450 linear feet of new ADA compliant sidewalk, curb ramps at two locations at on Viejo Camino between El Camino and Halcon Road, connection to a regional bus stop with a new bench and a new shelter. And I will make note, because I know council asked me, we are going to design or create the bid for the construction and add some bid alternatives for the enhanced crosswalk. The cost of those crosswalks, we believe, will be higher than what's budgeted. We're fingers crossed and hoping for a better result. So we will establish a bid alternative for that enhanced crosswalk to ensure that the project moves forward regardless of the funding amount. That estimated cost overall is between $400,000 and $650,000. And why there's a huge variance is primarily that mid-block cross, that enhanced crosswalk, which includes electrification and all those kind of things that go into enhanced crosswalk. And that enhanced crosswalk, if we do a crosswalk, we really, really highly, highly recommend doing an enhanced crosswalk, which is signalized, if you will, for pedestrian safety. The second one, item under the public facilities and housing was from CAPSLO, Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo. They requested funding for minor home repair and accessibility improvements of homes occupied by low and very low income within the city. Moving quickly onto public services category, the city of Atascadero has a robust, strong history of utilizing these funds for youth activity scholarships. This allows children of low-income families to participate in organized recreation, social, and cultural activities to keep children active and engaged. And more importantly, this population served would be otherwise unable to afford the activity fees to participate in the activities of choice without these important scholarships. The second item under public services is supporting ECHO. ECHO operates two navigation centers, one here in Atascadero, another one in the city of Paso Robles. ECHO works to meet the needs of unsheltered residents who have not yet sought emergency shelter through street outreach services and the needs of residents who are housed but in danger of losing their housing through homeless prevention services. This funding would greatly go toward their limited budget for operations. They also note that with the support of this funding, approximately 1,300 people per year are expected to access the services within ECHO. And ECHO continues to leverage volunteers, partners, and community support to serve and house a large number of people with a very small operating budget. And then the rest of the items are for administration. So the recommendation before you tonight, council, is to review and approve the funding recommendations for the 2026 Community Development Block Grant. As shown below, we want to make sure it's crystal clear about the funding requests and authorize staff to adjust the award amounts proportionally upon receipt once we receive that final funding amount, and staff is available for any questions. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Betts. Any member of the council have any questions? Mayor Pro Tem Darris.
Not a question, just a comment, because you answered it right at the end there. I was gonna ask if the allocation amount was significantly different up or down, would it come back to us, or would it be proportionally distributed? And you answered that question, so thank you.
And just curiosity along those lines, how often does it come back different?
You know, over time, it's come back a little bit different, a little high, a little low, but I would say within the margins, okay, enough that we can adjust it proportionally. Staff just kind of does that and make sure everything is kosher.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Any questions? All right, thank you. With that, we'll proceed out to see if there's any public comment on this item.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Hoslin. It's really sad that this dollar amount continues to get lower and lower every year. And it affects ECHO, which does a great job in our community, obviously. I do like the fact that we are putting a little bit more money into our youth scholarship program. But I will also make the comment that that does also help folks at Echo, because the children there now can get that grant money as well. So I think it's a great partnership, and I would recommend that you approve it as it is, but if the dollar amounts really do go up, which they normally don't, that the additional money does go to Echo. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anybody else wishing to comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to council for consideration. Does any member of the council want to make a comment or just make a motion to approve or reaffirm our previous recommendations?
Yeah, I do want to make a brief comment. Since these grants funnel through the Homeless Services Oversight Council, on which I represent the city, I just want to note that we are the only city that chooses to dedicate some of these funds to youth activity scholarships in this county, that is. And it almost always comes up as a question, and we almost always have to remind folks that that the Homeless Services Oversight Council has no jurisdiction over what this council chooses to do with this money. So just sort of a mind your own business. But the other point that I always make sure is made is something that Mr. Oslin just mentioned, that is ECHO supports are giving money to youth activity scholarships, because many times it is their residents who desperately need these opportunities that are funded through this money. So it is, at the levels we're talking about, is really valuable work. And it's a great tradition in this community to support our youth. Unless somebody else has a comment, I'll offer them a motion that we approve the funding recommendations for the 2026 Community Development Block Grant Program as shown by staff, and that we authorize staff to adjust final award amounts proportionately upon receipt of the final funding amount, unless the change is so large that it renders, downward, that it renders something unworkable as a grant. And I would incorporate the suggestion from Mr. Oslin that if there's a change of significance upward, that in the public services category, that we'd put that additional money to ECHO, since we put the...
If we wanted to do that, though, I think we'd have to specify what's significant to staff. Otherwise, they're going to, in other words, if the category changes by $1,000, I don't expect them to do that. But do you want to attach a number to that in terms of a significant... If there happens to be a significant increase in...
If the change in the thing results in a grant of less than $8,000, which would make it, if the organization doesn't get money from other sources on CDBG, it becomes difficult for them, then it should come back to council.
Understand that, but I mean in terms of an increase. Are you just suggesting that any increase in the public services category should go to ECHO?
Yeah.
Okay. That's clear enough for staff.
Since we did the youth activity scholarships earlier, we can, change, we do that, and everything else is proportional.
Okay, so here, let me try this. What I'm hearing from council is if we get more than the proposed $176,000.
No, just specifically in the public services category.
Well, if we get more than the $176,000, then the proportion of that, which is dedicated, the 15% maximum that's dedicated to the public services category, should all categories should be proportionally adjusted, and that the public services category within that cavity, that additional minor amounts go to ECHO.
I see. Thank you. That's clear.
Okay.
Is it clear enough for a second?
Yeah, I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Mayor Pro Tem Daras. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daras?
Yes.
Mayor Bourbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Right, thank you. We will move on to our next item, which is an 2025, or is it 2026, Building and Fire Code Updates. I guess it's actually 25, but we're dealing with it in 26. We're going to turn this over to our community development director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. It's that time again. Every 3 years, we're here with the required building code updates, fire code updates. They are basically called the 2025 code. They are effective January 1 of this year. And a lot of it's incorporated into city code by reference. We also are going to be introducing you to you tonight some local amendments. A lot of those local amendments we already have, but we have to carry those over each cycle. But there's also some new ones to really clean up the process a bit. This all results in amendments to our municipal code, two titles, Title 4, which is the fire code adoption and local amendments, and those items you see there on the screen. And then there's Title 8, which is a building code adoption and its local amendments and all the components that go with it. Now, we're very fortunate tonight because we have the individuals here that actually work with these codes on a daily basis, and they actually implement these codes out in the field. So I thought those are the best folks to tell you about the details and lead you through all the stuff. So first up, Dave Van Son, our fire marshal, is going to give you some details on the fire code portion. Then we'll go to some questions, and then we'll branch off to our building official who's here tonight as well, Bruce St. John, and we'll talk about the building side of things. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunsmore and Mr. Mayor, Council. I'm just here to talk about the fire code adoption and also the new 2025 Cal Wildland Interface Code adoption as well. So we're going to start off with the fire code adoption. So the fire code sets strong safety standards, but they don't always address local standards. And like Mr. Dunsmore said, we've had multiple code amendments in the past in the fire code that we use to add better safety or for this code cycle, our proposal of local amendments mirror all previous code updates with some minor clarifications. We had some issues in the codes that were confusing, so we just made some minor clarifications to make those updates more, or those amendments more easily understandable. So these amendments assure practical, effective fire protection tailored to our community specifically. But we don't have any new amendments to the fire code this year, which is something different than in the past. So everything's going to be a carryover from last year. Another thing is the fire code does not have any significant changes this year that affects the city property owners, business, or developers at all. I went through a code significant changes code class that they talked through every specific code change in the fire code. And none of those code changes had a direct impact into to the city of Atascadero. And then finally, this fire code adoption is going to replace the 2021 Wildland Urban Interface map with the 2025 Local Responsibility Area Fire Hazard Severity Zone map that we adopted back in May. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about this specific section right here, because this is the one that has had the most concern with council and the community. So the 2025 local responsible area has three different zones: the very high, which you see up there in red, and currently it's with this new map adoption that affects 1,600 parcels. Then we have the high fire severity zone, which is in the orange, and that affects 1,285 parcels. And then everything else in the yellow is the moderate fire hazard severity zone with 6,292 parcel. And everything in the gray is unclassified. So the significance of those areas is that's where the WUI code, Wildland Urban Interface Code, is going to take effect. Specifically in the high fire severity zone and the very high severity zone. And we do have a few local amendments that's going to address the moderate fire severity zone. So again, like I said, this map, the map on the top, was the one that was adopted in May of 2025. And we'll be replacing The map on the bottom that is in the green section of the map, that'll be going away. So the recent change parcels, the recent changes of our maps had changes to actual parcel classifications. So this map determines which parcels are subject to the 2025 WUI code, which I talked about previously. So 875 parcels that were considered urban, which didn't have any classification at all, that didn't have to meet any of the wildland urban interface code, are now designated as high fire severity zones. So those 875 parcels will now have to follow the wildland urban interface code section. Additionally, we had 3,095 parcels that were in our WUI, which was in that green section of the map, that now have been reclassified to the moderate. So they're not going to have to do the full code for wildland urban interface. And if the council chooses to adopt the amendments, they'll only have the ones in the moderate only have to do those that are amended to the moderate fire hazard severity zone. So now I'll get into the WUI code adoption. So this WUI code was historically found in Chapter 7A of the Building Code, or Chapter R337 of the Residential Code. So there was also several other places. There was an International Wildland Urban Interface Code that we had adopted previously. So this code section on building standards were in several different locations. So in 2025, the state decided to create their own California WUI code, and they combined the California Residential Code, the Building Code, the Fire Code, all into one comprehensive code in this book. So this is what we're proposing to adopt tonight with some local amendments. So this is so the major sections, construction areas that are going to be affected in the high and very high and some of the moderate are these ignition resistant materials that need to be done. So it would be roof assemblies, Class A roofs, meaning the roofs have to have a two-hour fire rating rather than a one-hour fire rating. Exterior walls and protection have to be fire resistant. Decks and accessory structures are subject to special ignition resistant requirements. The vents, exterior doors, glazing on windows and enclosures have to be limited ember entry and limited fire spread. The windows and glazings must use a multi-pane window, with one of those panes being a tempered glass. Underfloor and eave protection is going to be required, as well as perimeter gaps in the exterior doors to prevent ember intrusion. So we have four significant changes or amendments that we're requesting with this WUI code adoption. So currently, Atascadero Municipal Code requires full compliance of two specific things: an addition and increase of the building size by 50% or more, or the work of that remodel or rehabilitation of a structure, or more the building's replacement value. So if the replacement value is 75% more, the remodel is 75% more the building's replacement value, or the addition is going to be 50% or greater than the original size of the structure, then we're requesting that the full WUI code be implemented so that structure is in full compliance of the WUI code. And that change is there in the red of the code. And we have three other separate amendments that address the moderate fire severity zone. And so that's the yellow area in the maps. And so let me get to that page. So these proposed local amendments will apply to the yellow moderate, and that's to reduce ember cast and wildfire exposure
based on the findings of the recent Palisades and Eaton fires that caused major structure loss. So after seeing those two significant fires and the potential of a significant wildfire event in Atascadero sending those embers into the moderate area, we are proposing to make some changes to protect specifically ember intrusion into these structures. And the first one would be the roof assembly. So everything in the moderate fire severity zone would have to have the roof assembly, a Class A roof that's established by the code. The second would be garage door perimeter gaps. So we would it would eliminate the entrance of embers into garages. It's the gap can't be more than 1/8 inch thick. And the third one that we're looking into is the vents. Ventilation openings must comply to prevent embers and flame intrusion to reduce that ignition risk. And that's significant because most of those three things will prevent the embers with the roofs. It allows those embers, 2 hours is a long time. It gives them the ability for patrol crews to patrol the area if they're seeing embers on roof, to get those while the rest of the fire apparatus or personnel are actually fighting the fire. So they could prevent the spread of the fire by embers with these specific things to reduce the intrusion of the embers into the home and to ignite them. And so we do also have a few minor changes to the WUI code to improve clarity, ensuring consistency with our current municipal code and our engineering standards that we have already in place, and to maintain safe building and property conditions. And these are specifically for our driveway standards, fire department turnaround standards, and our addressing standards. The code has different standards than what we currently have in our municipal code. So those are just minor amendments that we're proposing to the WUI code. And that's what I have, if you have any questions for me.
Okay, as a second part of this, we're gonna hear from somebody in community development. Okay, but since we have the questions slide up, I think we'll go to council questions for this portion. I'll start on my left, Councilmember Peak.
Yeah, two questions. Could you clarify on the garage door header and casing? It says metal flashing. Normally you have like a vinyl strip around for weatherproofing the garage door. Metal flashing, what is that exactly? What do you mean by?
So the code says perimeter gapping. So it's it would be a non-combustible type of weatherproofing material that reduces the gap along the garage door to 1/8 inch or less.
So normally that's like a vinyl gasket. That's like like a poly vinyl gasket.
Correct, but this has to be a non-combustible type of material.
Is that going to be something that's readily going to be sold by garage door companies, or is this going to be a separate thing we have to as homeowners deal with?
Just for the record, Bruce St. John, Chief Building Official here with the City of Atascadero. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council members. So typically speaking, with the flashing, as Dave Van Sun, a fire marshal, mentioned, it'd be readily accessible from any sheet metal manufacturer, most likely garage door marketers and installers. Yes, that's correct.
I've never seen a metal flashing on a garage door, so I'm just kind of curious if that's something that's coming. Like,
sounds noisy.
I've never seen it, so I'm wondering what that is going to be look like and where it's going to be coming from.
The flashing would be from the front fascia when the garage door makes its approach to the house. Usually you have an angle on a garage door. I'm not specifically sure what that angle is, but the flashing would be attached so that as the garage door closes, there'd be less of a gap between the actual front face of the door and the structure itself, which would eliminate or provide a smaller air gap. So it wouldn't be moving. It wouldn't be part of that portion of the garage door.
Okay. It just seems like a new building material. Maybe I just haven't seen it before, but usually it's vinyl.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the 50% on the addition or alterations to a house, you know, a lot of our houses are like a colony house is relatively small. My old house in Dolores was 1,000 square feet. So if I added a large living room and a bigger and expanded the kitchen, that would be 50%. You know, ensuite bedroom, typical new remodel right now is like 20 by 15 is gonna be 300. So if you add another bathroom and a little bit, I'm just kind of curious if that number was just because of any specific like data as to like permits that we've pulled, how what our average addition is in town, in terms of where that number came from, the 50%.
Yeah, so that number came from, that's what we currently require in residential structures when they do additions for fire sprinklers. So anything currently for an R3, a residential, that has a an addition over 50%, we require the whole building to be sprinkled. So we're trying to be consistent with that and to reduce, you know, fire spread, structure spread too, because that 50% of the house already has to be built to the WUI standards. So half the house would be to the wildland urban interface standards and the other half would not be to the wildland interface standards.
So if you remodel and you add more than 50%, you don't have to, the entire house doesn't have to be retrofitted with everything in the fire code? No,
with this amendment, if you're doing 50% or more, the entire house would have to. Without the amendment, it would not. So half the house would be compliant and the other half of the house would not be compliant.
No more questions.
Mayor Pro Tem Darius?
Actually, I had two questions and that was kind of one of them right there. So just for clarification, so if somebody was to do an addition that was more than 50% and it is a colony house that has wood lap siding, then the entire house would have to, that siding would have to come off and put, say, hardy or stucco or something, that because the wood siding would be considered a combustible material.
That is correct.
The entire house. Wow. Okay. Well, it makes it safer, I guess. Your neighbor's house isn't going to burn down. The next question is, and this is just for discussion. You can answer it how you can. The multi-pane windows, so obviously we were required to put dual pane windows in at a minimum anyway. But I found it interesting that it said at least one of the panes, or not at least, one of the panes needs to be tempered. And I'm curious as to, I'm sure the window manufacturer will take care of it, but which pane is going to be tempered? It seems like it make it more sense that they'd both be tempered, which I imagine they probably are. But is there something significant to that? Because I can't imagine you'd have a dual pane and one being tempered and the other one not, because the non-tempered one should be on the outside because that's the one that's going to be the most dangerous if it breaks.
Yeah, the code specifically says that one is tempered, and Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's the exterior window that has to be the tempered glass, which reduces the impact of the heat on that window.
So I'm sure the